to Illusion of Difference, I as Creator, with your host, Elondis Lake. Our search for unity starts within. Our quest for safety starts within. Once we understand the role difference plays when building community, we can release what we are holding back. We can learn from life's challenges. We can become who we are meant to be.
Hello, hello, hello. This is Elondis, and this is Illusion of Difference. I want to start the show today by recognizing a huge loss that I woke up to this morning. Bell Hooks has passed away, left us. And she left a huge mark on my identity. When I first read her writing actually touched me in a place where I had no names. I knew it was there, but I just didn't have the words to describe it. And for that gift that she was and that gift that she brought to the world, I honor her for that and will never forget her. Rest in peace, my sister. Today, I have my friend and colleague, C. Daywalker, and I want to bring you in and say welcome to the show.
Hello. Can you hear me?
Hi. Yes, I can.
Hi. How are you doing today? I heard about the loss, and
yes.
I'm so sorry.
Yes.
It causes quite a pause inside, doesn't it?
It does, and it takes time to process it and even put words to it. I mean, I just found out about this today. It just happened today. So I'm still processing it, but I just wanted to start the show by recognizing her and the many people that have been touched by her presence and her writings, her gifts. Yes.
That's what I was going to mention was, as profoundly as she touched you, this is the time to celebrate that how many she touched, and just know that she left pieces of herself all over the place, and hopefully that'll be passed down as well.
Yes, yes. So we're going to continue talking and modeling what we can do as human beings to get to know each other, because we're living in a world that is becoming more, with each generation, is becoming more and more and more separated. We have all these little boxes, and we keep adding them. I want to share, and you want to share, and we have that in common. And that's one of the things that we do every time we get together. We share about ourselves, and in the process, find common ground that we wouldn't find otherwise. So that said, just let it go like a stream and take turns asking each other questions. So I'm going to say, who wants to go first? Do you want me to go first?
Well,
or do you want to go first? You
know what? I'm going to take the talking stick. First I want to say that thank you, because, I feel like I've been deprived of dialogue for so long. I mean, I host these, these groups, but as a host, I don't center myself, and I center the membership, and I end up not, if I'm going to moderate a topic, I make sure I don't actually engage and take part in it, because I feel like it's almost intimidating. If somebody has a differing opinion from the admin, they don't want to. So I back off of the dialogue. So I end up reading along and following dialogue, but I don't get enough opportunity to actually openly engage in it. And so then I found Elandos.
Yeah, we found each other.
And,
yeah,
found each other. And so I wanted to thank you for that, for that platform, and for feeding that, that part of me.
Go ahead.
You don't have to put a C in front of my name. You can just put Daywalker. That C is there. The C is there because Facebook made me put it there.
Oh.
Yeah. Long story.
They were like, no, that's your first name. You got to put a first name there.
But
come on.
They made me send in my IG. Yeah, they made me send in my IG to verify my identity as somebody. Reported my name, they wanted. Yeah, I know, it was ridiculous. This was 3-4 years ago, so that C has been in front of my name ever since I had to send in my ID. So it's going to change. It's going to change in a few months, though. All the legal paperwork is coming through, so I get send in my new ID, and they can just change that for me.
Yeah, or they can say, well, we need proof of this too.
What do they want? What could they possibly need next, right?
Yeah.
You know, I hit your profile some time ago, I looked through a little bit of your events timeline, and so for today's talk, it is something that actually came back to me that I had a question about, and that was that somewhere in your timeline, 10 or so years ago, you simply stated that you overcame a fear.
Hmm.
And there's no details next to it. And I'm wondering if you might fill that in.
Yeah. About 10 years ago. Gosh. Overcame a fear. What the hell was it?
I love that.
Oh gosh, 10 years ago. That, what was I? Where was I? I was. I know what it was.
You did good.
I know what it was, and it was overcoming a fear. I sang a solo for the first time.
Dog.
In front of people, not just in my shower.
Yeah.
And I was
not just air guitar in the garage, right? That's what it, yeah, so did you overcome the fear of stage fright, or having other people hear your voice or know that part of you?
It was I don't think it was so much stage fright per se, but it was connected to being judged, because I grew up being judged by mostly my mother, but just in general. That was part of my childhood. I just took it like it was, except for my dog. My dog didn't judge me. She was like, "You're cool. Just give me one of those little doggy biscuits, and we're good." that was. I named him Spot. I named her Spot because at that time I was laughing at the See Spot Run books. I'm dating myself for real now. Spot and. I forget the kids' names, but there was a boy and a little girl and a cat, I think, and Spot. And I named my dog Spot. But I'm digressing. But yes, it was more about being judged and being vulnerable, because in front of people, a lot of people that I didn't know, it was the audience, and it was journey just getting to where I could sing in rehearsals in front of the group that I was singing with. And I knew most of them, and you know, so it was a journey, and I would freeze, do the stuff that happens when you're afraid. And I would lose the lyrics. I knew the lyrics. It was not that wasn't the problem, but the problem was being vulnerable. That was a very vulnerable spot for me, and I liked to sing, I have a decent voice, so it wasn't like I sounded horrible.
Did you have friends? did you have friends in the audience, or was it all stranger friends?
Well, the people that I knew were part of the whole chorus, but the audience, I might have known a few faces and things, but it was pretty good sized audience, and I didn't know any of them to speak of, not to feel comfortable around them that way. No. So that was a biggie for me, and I don't think I wrote much about it, actually. No.
Does that have you flashing back? Sorry to bring you so far back.
Well, I was happy that I did it. I had to make myself do it up to the last minute. I didn't know if I was going to get on that stage, and you know, there's a moment when you're doing something, whatever it is, when you can either fall flat on your face before you do anything, or you can get over it and use it for a springboard. And I didn't know which way that would go. And there was a whole room full of people sitting there, you know, listening and waiting to see what I was going to do. Not in a negative way, just, you know, what I was going to sing and stuff. So that was me overcoming something pretty big. Yeah.
Good. Well, I'm going to roll into my next one, if you don't mind.
No, I don't.
Bringing you further, even further back. I'm also curious. I know, right? I'm also curious that your studies are in theology.
Yes.
Some of one section of your, and I wanted to know what drew you to that.
Oh God! When everything goes with me goes all the way back with these kinds of questions. They go, find a lot about me if you just ask, you know, and I believe that's true for everybody. But when, as far back as I can remember, I had this deep call to be a priest. Now, you have to understand, growing up in the Catholic school, at the time frame when we spoke Latin in mass, we sang in Latin. It was before the guitar and the grassroots Catholicism came out. The only thing I saw anywhere near what I felt I was being called to do was a white male priest, and every once in a while they would bring one of their priests from the African continent, and they wouldn't tell you where what country, and they would just say he's an African, and he's an African priest, and he's going to preach. And everybody would look at him and stare and say, ooh and ah. And then he'd go on back to Africa. And then the norm took over. So that's the kind of thing I grew up in, seeing and not seeing myself, but also feeling called to be a priest. And I was told maybe you should be a nun. And I tried to wrap my mind around it, but nope, that's not what I was being called to do.
Right. I'm sorry. I just pictured Sally Field. With a flying nun. Oh, yeah.
No, yeah. That's not, I wasn't called for that. So I lost it. I lost that call, the intimacy with the call. It wasn't part of my daily life as I got older. And I started to acclimate myself to the world that I was living in, where, okay, girls they're not supposed to be crosswalkers, you know, where they help kids cross the street. I forget what they called it. Those are all boys. I forget what it was. I'm not supposed to be a priest. And I guess, I don't know. And the other part of me was drawn to medicine. Anatomy, physiology, I was fascinated by that. And I would sit down and read, and I had these plastic that you could see through. I don't know if they still have them. They should, for kids, where you put them together and you could see the lungs intestines, all of the little things you can see, and you put it together, and I forget what they call it, but I had a bunch of those.
Like an advanced game of Operation. You remember that game?
Yeah, I do. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
But so all my life, as I got older, I moved more toward the medical field, and I made my money as far as raising kids and things like that, working in the OR and as a surgical technician. And I specialized in orthopedics, total joints, shoulders, knee, hips. And that's how I paid my way for my kids and myself, for that matter. And then they got older, and all of a sudden I had a choice. I could either go to PA school and be a PA who specialized in orthopedics, or I could, all of a sudden, I got back in touch with my call, go to seminary. And by this time, I had run into metropolitan community churches. So that opened the door for me to consider living into my actual call from way back as a kid. And for a while, I was bouncing back and forth and trying to decide, because both of them entailed going to school for at least 4 years. And it also entailed moving, or it was a disruption either way. So it was like I was right at a crux where I'm going to disrupt my life anyway. And my kids are older and they're getting out of the nest. So let's see what it is. And it was,
some of them fall out. Some of them have to be pushed out.
That's true. That is true. But,
it's like, I'm sorry, your 18 years is up. Yeah.
Yeah. So I picked seminary, and I went to Union Theological Seminary, got an MDiv, and I was with MCC at that time for most of it. And that's I came out with a degree and, did work in the ministry with HIV, AIDS, chaplaincy, things like that. And that's how I ended up with a seminary training. So it's your turn now.
Uh-oh.
I want to ask you. I like asking questions, because I'm really curious about people, and a lot of times I used to go through asking questions, and I realized that people are like, why are you asking me that? and it made sense, because in the world, you don't go around, this isn't usually a usual thing that we do, where you just say, okay, I'm going to learn about what this person, I'm going to ask about that. So I want to know, when was the first time that you felt totally connected, totally empowered, and totally comfortable with your identity as an adult? Because we come
as
here like
adult.
That as kids. Yeah. We're like that as kids, and then we lose it, and then we have to find it back. But you clearly have found yours. So
yeah,
what was going on around that time? What can you share, do you want to share?
I had a defining moment that didn't have words for it when I was a kid. That did carry over when I was in like second grade. They used to have what they called yard duty teachers. People would be out there for recess to, monitor the children and whatnot. And, and one day she blew the whistle and she says, everybody line up, boys over here, girls over there. And I was standing next to her just smiling and watching, smiling and watching. And she looked down at me and she said, "What are you waiting for?" And I said, "I was waiting for my line." And you know, of course, I've got sent home with another note pinned to my shirt, but you know, it was my poor mom. But it was something that even as a child, because I identify as agender, so that would be other gender, not a mix of male female, but just neither. I felt like an observer of you know the boys' line and the girls' line, but I didn't feel like I belonged to either. And I meant what I said when I was that young. It wasn't until mid 40s that I found the word for it. And it validated. I think I'd always been comfortable walking the world as myself, but didn't actually have terms and language for it. That's when I started to delve into, the colonization of Western civilization and why and where a lot of the other gendered folks got wiped out here in the U.S. and whatnot. And it kind of pissed me off to find out the history behind it, but to find out that the whole thing has developed into this social construct that basically says, act like a lady, and sit like a lady, act like a man. These types of things, all the way down to pink and blue being separated by color and gender. And by that I mean the binary was put into place, but back then it was pulled from scripture, and it was not about gender. It was about your genitals. It was about your assigned sex, and they had it mixed up because the gender is of the brain. And sex is of the body. It swept across many, many, many generations. So by the time I was born, everything was separated as to, what you are socially assigned to according to your assigned sex. And they say gender, but again, they don't know what they're talking about back then. Gender is not the same. And so I never looked at all of that as it was okay. I have never conformed to it. And so I think I was always comfortable being different and comfortable sitting amongst anybody, any crowd, any small, big, anything, and being comfortable in my own identity. Again, I just didn't have terms for it yet. But I never really came at the world or viewed it from the binary. So it was really interesting to unpack all that in my mid-40s.
That's something we have in common, because that was right around that time, too. In my mid-40s.
I always knew I was the gay. I always knew I was the gay. That was, that started with crushes on when I was in kindergarten, even though I really didn't feel male or female, I according to my assigned sex, if I was crushing on a little girl, I was the gay. That I was always comfortable with that as well. I have to say that part of the blessing behind that was being third generation born and raised in Oakland, California, and in the Bay Area. And it's a fast paced, fast moving reality in those areas. And the diversity I was surrounded by was just beautiful, and this was the experience for me, and finding out that not everybody was privy to being surrounded by such beauty made me sad for them. Because you know, folks that are not born in areas that are surrounded by diversity can really only base their knowledge on what they were surrounded by and exposed to. And for me, I feel like I had an advantage because of where I come from. And I think that also took part. I had to put that into the accounts for me being comfortable being me because there was so many different layers of people in personality, in culture, in color, in everything. And so it was like it was okay, you know. I didn't have to hide. And I never felt the need to. In fact, as somebody who grew up the gay, I just waited for the right time to disclose that, to family, friends, and whatnot. I had a boyfriend and whatnot, and the funny part is when you say to somebody, it's not you, it's me. I actually meant it when and we ended up friends we were still friends for many, many, many years after that. But my last boyfriend was age 17. But when I was coming out, I let him know, hey, it's not you, it's me, you know. And while that sounded like a crock of shit, it was true. And but as far as gender presentation, at age 50, I made the decision to go on low dose T, and this wasn't anything to do with being transgender. I'm not transgender. It wasn't anything to do with a transition. It was a low dose T for me was going to give me the ability to grow facial hair. And as a butch with long hair, adding that to it just simply matched with my insides, which I'm a hippie, you know. my outer shell then matched my inner shell, and that includes still holding on to my assigned female at birth body. I've never had a problem with the body I was born in. I've never conformed to the social rules that followed around it. And I'm happy to talk with anybody who wants to know a little bit more about being other gendered, because, when I hand over my ID, which still has an F on it, you know, and then they look at my facial hair, there's a look, there's a moment, there's a pause, and I'm happy to introduce, hey, I was just born differently. And that's generally enough, with a big smile. It's generally enough to put them at ease, make it a whole moment comfortable, and move on. I did co-author a book with a trans man a couple of years ago, Michael Eric Brown, who has a lot of books published. I applied to be the co-author of a book called Challenging Genders, the Non-Binary Experiences of Those Assigned Female at Birth. Okay.
Is it still in print?
It sure is. It would just come out a couple years ago.
Send the link to me, and I'll stick it on with the show notes.
Great.
Yeah.
The first part of the book is all educational, and the last part of the book is 16 stories from personal accounts and experiences that were submitted. So we've got personal voices involved at the back end of the book, and we have education involved at the beginning of the book. When I say I literally wrote the chapter on pronouns, I did. It was interesting to delve into that kind of study as well. And these are the things that also helped me be even more comfortable in walking my truth, because it did disclose some history behind a lot of pronouns in both in the literary world, and on continents other than our own. And studying that, it's just every time I delved in, I felt more and more comfortable in my own skin as presenting the way I do. And I do host a community that is full of unique individuals, unique identities, and I think being able to host folks that a space where folks like myself can walk in and feel comfortable means a lot to me.
Yeah, you do really good work. I know you. I've said this to you, you know, face to face, but I'm going to say it now on air. You do very important work, especially in today's world, which leads me to another question that I have for you. And that is, what advice would you give young people today who are back where we were, only in a very, very fast-paced world, a lot of stuff coming out at them, information, just images, you know, things distracting, games, all kinds of stuff, who may be wondering about the relationship between their sex and their gender, and just not to push them in any direction whatever, just what advice would you give them to calm them down or get them up or whatever it is that they need to feel comfortable with themselves in the moment that they're in?
And the first thing I would tell them is self-discovery is definitely a journey that is individual, and it's a privilege to be on a journey of self-discovery. And if they, my first thing to tell them is don't ask anybody else how you should identify.
Yes.
Because it's easy for somebody to point at you and put you in a box. And I like to say when you do it yourself, you get an octagon, not a box.
I like that.
You know, just you get a lot more corners to be in, you know, and to discover and to study. And I highly suggest that they study sexuality separate from gender. Do not study the two at once. And I also recommend to all educators and all parents, don't ever sit down and speak with your children about sexuality and gender in one sitting. This is how the two of them are getting blended together when they are not related. They don't have anything to do with each other. And this is, even as adults, we have even people in our own community who are still not aware of the separation. They have a tendency, this natural tendency to try and, correlate one's, gender ID to their sexuality. Mm-hmm. And they're just not related like that. It is really, really different. We didn't have Google. We had libraries. We had books. And we had whatever they allowed us to read, you know.
Yes.
And that was policed heavily. Even educating on truth, the truth behind our history white America was just watered down, filtered, and really cut to pieces. And the thing that they're dealing with today is information overload. You know, when you Google one word, you get 19,738 results. You know, and that's a lifetime of links just for one word. And so what they're dealing with is fast paced. And you know, so I feel like the evolution of the brain and technology for just 50 years ago compared to today, the brains are evolving to absorb more at a faster pace. However, it's somewhere in the middle of that, we're also losing time and value for voices to things like video games and stuff. I mean, they're not very educational. They're a lot of them are violent and sexist and horrible. But you know, we'll lose them for hours into these video games. And not to say, I mean, as a hobby, that's great. But the time that they could be spending online in the study of their of people and humans and sociology and things like this, I just feel like their time would be better spent especially since their brains are able to absorb more. Because we need a future. When I'm old, I want folks who know what the hell they're doing when they're driving the bus. Do you know what I mean? right now, I don't have a whole lot of faith that the percentage of folks that are supposed to be collecting the knowledge to put it to use later are doing so.
Go ahead. I'm sorry.
My advice is to them is just, I mean, it's pretty basic. The information overload, it needs to be harnessed. And that's really tough to do. Myself, I study something, I wonder about something, I hit Google, and there goes another rabbit hole. Sometimes you just don't got enough. You don't have enough carrots to fill that time. I can't imagine what it was like growing up nowadays.
It's kind of rough. It really is on the young people, especially if they don't consider themselves fitting right in a hole that's already there. It's pretty rough, and that leads me to another question that I have, and that is, what would you say to people who want to help young people navigate their feelings and navigate where they are in their life at the moment, and without pushing them in a particular direction? I feel like I have to continue to say that because that's one of the things that I see.
You're right. And can I say that I had behavioral science was one of my back studies, I think that what we're dealing with today is because of information overload and whatnot. Some of the younger generation, they really think that Google has them in a status of a superior knowledge and intelligence, and it does not. And ego is where it's based. We have the ego, the superego, so for the purposes of having to walk around those egos and how delicate they can be, the word mentor seems to be a deterrent because it indicates that they need help. And that they need guidance. And I would suggest staying away from the word mentorship and go to something like guidance. Because I've noticed that a couple of young folks I was speaking to, they really backed off when I mentioned a mentor program. Because it made them feel like they weren't as smart as they thought. It made them feel like they do need assistance. It made them, somehow... somewhere along the way, that word got a bad rep. And that was just my own personal observance from speaking with the younger folks. And I noticed that. I just picked it up, And I noticed when I changed my language and my approach around it, I was received differently.
Do you think that mentorship, when I try to stay away from that too, those two words, and I never really decided why. I'm getting something to think about talking with you. And that's what happens. That's why I like this. But the mentor and mentorship, I think one of the things for me, those two words, and I'm going to go on the dark side, but I'm not going to stay there long. It connects with grooming some young kid to, for lack of a better word, be comfortable being sexual in ways that they're not ready for. I have over my, I guess this will be my question. I'm asking the question of myself, but I think this is kind of it. I don't want to lose this. I've talked as a minister, talked to I don't know how many adults, mostly males, but some women, who have very private memories, because most of them said that that was the first time they ever even talked about being sexually abused by clergy. And they have this a lot of times for the youth in churches, and they call them mentorship or mentoring our youth to be better adults. So do you think, did you run into that kind of resistance or when you were processing the
No,
two words?
I did not, actually. I think most of what I was running into was they didn't see a lot of value in our antiquated views.
Oh, okay. Well.
And but they felt it took an I had to initiate particular topics to make it so that they knew I was open to speaking about it. And when we're talking about the fluidity of sexuality and the fluidity of gender and whatnot, I never had anybody actually touch on the trauma of what they've dealt with, but yeah. More so their curiosities and how they've been, not shamed into it, but they were just ashamed to admit some of their curiosities and making them feel, letting them know that, this is, humans are wired naturally to be attracted to and drawn to certain things and people. And everybody's wiring is different. And, matching that with somebody who, who's open to the same things as you, it's just like when you go to, when you're seeking a partner nowadays, it's important to put that topic on the table.
Yeah.
You need to know if they have triggers. You need to know if they have boundaries. And you need to know this before you reach the moment of intimacy, because that's not the time to talk about it. It should be spoken about and addressed before you get your clothes off in front of each other.
Yep.
That really kill the moment when they suddenly have to start talking about their triggers. So,
you're in an awkward moment and you don't even know why.
Yeah, really awkward. Yeah. It's like, okay, I'm going to go put my clothes back
happened?
On now.
Well, I guess I'll go watch the football game or something.
Something. But I think when we were kids and we looked at adults, we didn't see them as an open book to talk to about our sexuality,
No.
And I don't think that's changed much. So I think initiating an open door to it lets them know that, hey, we got some. We're knowledgeable here. Go ahead, go for it. It's okay to bring this up.
Well, that I appreciate your answers. It made, like I said, one of them made me think about something that I wouldn't have ordinarily thought of, and that's why this is important. So you got another question for me? I think we have probably time for maybe one or two. Okay.
I do. When you began your venture of talk radio host, and from then up to now, do you have a topic that was the most difficult for you to cover?
Yes. I did a series on Sharia law. And I interviewed women, and one in particular I still carry her around. Her story was difficult, let's put it that way. And in the series was a movie that was aired, and I had the privilege of talking with the writer and the director for this movie, and he went to a place, I don't remember the country, but it was It was up in the mountains, and the people didn't have any contact with other people, and that's where he wanted to go. And interviewed the women and the men. And it's the name of the movie was The Stoning of Soraya M. I'll never forget doing that.
And Soraya, spell that.
S-O-R-Y-A.
Okay.
I think that's spelled correctly. It did several things. It let me know how privileged we are. No matter how much stuff we have to bitch about, we think we have to bitch about, they're messing with abortion, and they're doing this and they're doing that. In this country, it's far better than the majority of the rest of the people in the world, especially when you pull in gender and sex. And blend that in with religion, it gets very dangerous and complicated. So that walks with me every time I start a podcast. It's with me because I never know or never knew when I'll be struck with someone's story and just be humbled. And so that's how I would answer that.
I did a quick Google while you were speaking, and that's a pretty intense story to carry.
Yeah, it is. Yeah.
At only 35, somebody who was stoned to death after false rumors of her adultery.
Yeah, that's right.
Things like that can make you feel really blessed to be in an area of this planet that isn't so barbaric. And
and the way the director did the play and the show was. He just showed it. It wasn't, didn't make any commentary either in writing or in showing. He just showed it. And that made it even more powerful because he wasn't trying to support a particular agenda. He was just showing life for some people.
Yeah.
And
The realities are quite different from one continent to the next, are they not?
Yeah. Yeah, they are. So,
well, if you've got a moment, I actually have one more question, just one more, and
okay.
That is,
we've got about 10 minutes. Yeah.
All right. Cool. Best friends. I'm sure you've got a couple. What would they say about you if I was to ask them to describe you in just a couple of paragraphs? What would they say about you?
I have no idea. I think they would say that I take forever to make a point.
Excellent. Me too. Yep.
I mean, I can talk for 30 minutes and this, then come to my point. And I also think that they would say that I try to listen, but sometimes I don't. Sometimes I don't, but I do try, and I the older I get, the more I try. Now I ask, am I hearing what I, or, you know, so I always kind of check that. They would also say that I'm not motivated by money and never have been. What I do because it's my soul's work. And that has put me in some economic challenges, but hey,
I feel
my soul's
you.
Happy.
I feel you. I feel you. Uh huh. Yeah.
And let's see what else they would say that I don't like being single, but I don't like being connected with someone that I am not compatible with. I've gone that route a couple of times, so I'm ready to try somebody that I'm compatible with. The last thing I think would be that if I'm asked the question, I'll do my best to answer it. And if I don't know, I'll say I don't know. I have to think about that. So I won't.
I do the I
won't
same
bullshit.
Thing.
I won't
yes,
shit them.
Yes.
I won't bullshit them. Let's
yes.
put it that way.
You can always tell if I'm bullshitting because I'll start a sentence with, you know, my grandma used to say, because I swear to you, most people, if you start a sentence with that, most people will believe anything you say after that.
That's the griot,
but,
Adam.
Yeah.
You call on your ancestors and they'll say, oh, well, they must know what they're talking about. They're quoting their ancestors.
Right. But I get a particular sheepish grin that'll let people know that I'm pulling their legs. So, yeah.
Well, my friend,
yeah.
I think we're going to have to wrap it up a little bit. This was fun. I hope it was fun for you as well.
Yes.
And
yes,
I feel
was.
Like I know you a little better too. Yeah.
Good.
Yeah. Maybe we'll do it
Good.
Again. Who knows?
We're going to
be doing.
And as far as your compatibility, because this won't actually be uploaded until later tonight or tomorrow, correct?
I usually do on the back end. I did it on the front end this time. So all I'm going to do is check for typos, add the link in there that I want to add, and I might be able to get it up tonight.
Well, good. Well, by then we'll have already made our big announcement. For your compatibility, we are launching the Butch Femme dating app this evening.
Oh, great. Uh-huh. That's fantastic. Congratulations.
So, months of work, and so tonight we are going to go ahead and open the door and launch it. So we hope to see you over there, and my wife's going to be very busy approving people in. But I really hope that this is a great assistant to finding a compatibility for you.
Oh, I do too, and I will. I'm with you. I'm with you. I think that's fantastic that you're doing this. Yeah, and much needed, much needed.
Yeah,
so
it's for the people. I mean, we're already married. I'm already married. You know, this is not. This is just for the community. Yes.
Yeah.
So, all right.
All right, my
friend. I look forward to hearing this over, and I'll make sure that it gets posted in the groups as well.
Okay, thank you. I appreciate that. And we're going to continue to do work together. I want to continue to do work with you. And
oh, yeah, you're kind of stuck with me now.
Ah, well, you're stuck with me. We're stuck with each other. Oh. All right, have a good night, and congratulations with the dating app.
Thanks.
That's all I have today. Until next time.